The hour of 10:15, Hammer, I would call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. We will start out to Representative McDonald's, House File 908. And, you know, as we do, Vice Chair McDonald and two of the testifiers, we will break in when we do have a quorum. So please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. House Files 908 is a really good bill. It's really good for our restaurant and hospitality industries. So what this does is it offers meals and drinks sales tax exemption. So for restaurateurs who give a discounted or even a complimentary meal or drink are required by state law to pay sales tax. Well, how do you pay sales tax on a beverage that is perhaps complimentary from an employer to an employee? Very difficult, and I think it's, for that reason, I think it's good governance to have that sales tax exemption. It's hard to articulate or to even calculate taxing meals or drinks that are reduced or even complimentary. So that's the first part of the bill. Second part of the bill is a sales tax exemption for capital equipment purchases. It is argued by many that a restaurant produces something, right? They produce food. And in the state of Minnesota, our current state law allows for businesses who invest in capital improvements to be a sales tax exemption. For example, when I buy my cameras that produces an image, according to state law, I am sales tax exempt on that item. I'm producing something. If I manufacture a hockey puck or a baseball bat or a piece of equipment, there's a sales tax exemption because we're producing something and then taxing that. Well, capital improvements for a restaurant such as a stove, range, a refrigerator, or other items that they produce and create something to sell and tax should also be included as a sales tax exemption. I think that just makes good common sense, and it fits in with current state statutes that we currently have on the books. So that's just a brief explanation of the bill. I presented this a couple years ago. I continue to work for it. I do have a couple of testifiers that would be very happy to enlighten you and testify on my bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair McDonald. First of all, let's just see a lay of the land here. Is there anyone that wishes to testify in opposition to the McDonald bill? Or not opposition, that's such a harsh word. With concerns. Okay, so you have a couple testifiers on behalf of your bill. Let's hear from them. Since there's no one with concerns, we'll do a short and shortened version. The department, Mr. Cummins?
Yes.
Okay. We'll hear from our testifiers. We'll have some questions for them, and then we'll go to the department. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Maria Beach, and I represent my family's restaurants in Culver's.
Culver's. How many Culver's do you have?
Five, working on number six currently.
Awesome. And the other gentleman here?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Arthur Morrissey, representing Morrissey Hospitality.
And who would like to start?
I would, if that's all right.
Okay. You state your name and who you represent for the record.
Again, my name is Maria Beach, and representing Culver's, my family's business. I'm here to tell you a little bit about my family's restaurant business. Like I said, it's a family that I run with my business that I run with my brother, my sister, my dad, and my uncle. We've been creating jobs in Minnesota for 17 years, and there's been two things that have always been true for our business. One, it's a business of small margins. Two, it's a business about people. We pride ourselves in creating family-like atmosphere for both our team members and our guests, and some ways we make people feel welcome is by providing delicious meals and maintaining a clean and welcome environment, but also by making them feel appreciated on special occasions. It's helping a family celebrate their grandpa's 90th birthday party, and we provide desserts on us just because we think it's a special opportunity that we want to help with. Or maybe an employee that comes in and got their first A on a report card in a while. We might buy them a meal as well. And this is where we would love a tax. It's a lot, like you said, it's hard to... being taxed on these meals and treats has not stopped us from providing these memories, but it would allow us to do more. It also gets tricky to track consistency, repeatability, and accuracy to reduce our tax audit risk. when I leave it up to my managers to make sure they're ringing it in correctly. Another tax that can be quite burdensome to us in the industry is the tax on capital equipment. Like you had said, it's a manufacturing business of sorts. We manufacture Butterburgers where we are.
Okay.
The best of Butterburgers. And so our product or our machines that we use to create and craft these burgers are taxed. So like he said, we purchase a grill and would pay tax on that, and also we create the taxable product off of that grill. And that's where I feel like we could really use your help. A tax break during crucial times, such as startup times, is an immense help. Even though we have, like I said, a handful of restaurants at this point, it never gets less risky. Every time you open up a new business, those starting costs are get out of hand really quickly and can set the tone for your future of the business. So I'd welcome any of you, if you have any questions, to come visit me at my restaurants. I would love to show you around if you want to understand what we do. What we do in our communities. I love what I do, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. Thank you.
Ms. Veach, where are these located?
I have Savage, West St. Paul, Anoka, Egan, Rosemont, and we're building right now in White Bear Lake.
Okay. And if you could, maybe at the next corporate board meeting, about a couple months ago you dropped the chicken dinners.
Yes.
Could you possibly bring those back?
I would love to talk about that. Yeah, I'm sure. Gosh, and I'm sure, yes, you heard that our founder was a big proponent of fried chicken. He loves the product, as do I. I think we had the best fried chicken, but there's two things that Culver's is really big on. One, fresh product, right? Fried chicken, unfortunately, can't be cooked to order. It takes too long. So
if it's fried, how can you really tell if it's fresh?
What? There's some things that we're working on.
I've got to go to North Atlantic Cod and the
our walleye's back beef. Soon, so come back for that.
Okay.
The walleye's back in a couple of weeks, like next week, so come on in.
Work on the chicken if you would.
I will.
Okay. To the next gentleman here, please state your name. But we do have a quorum, members. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We'll have to wait on the minutes here a bit. But Representative McDonald moves House File 908. Representative McDonald, is that your amendment, the A1?
Mr. Chairman, this is... Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'd like to move House File the A1 amendment.
I got burned a little bit in Commerce last night. I went to move an amendment, and it was Representative Hillstrom's amendment that I guess we didn't like very much.
So, that can happen.
Yeah, it's good to see what you have here. So, Representative McDonald's moves the 80908 A1 amendment. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Item next. Okay, we will go to the bill. As amended, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Arthur Morrissey. I represent Morrissey Hospitality Companies. Some of the brands, restaurants, hotels that we operate are the St. Paul Hotel, Pozzoluna, Bunker Hills Golf Club, St. Paul River Center. And I can only support and reiterate with what Maria stated in terms of we are a family business. We have employees that work when we play. We have employees that work at night, they work on holidays, they work on weekends. And providing them with gifts, ways to show our support to them is invaluable. Another aspect that we provide are employee meals to our staff. And that's about $150,000 on an annual basis across all our brands in Minnesota that we provide those meals. That helps them emotionally, that helps them physically, it helps them financially. In providing them with a healthy, a nutritious meal that they can enjoy and then really do their job well in creating the experiences and getting the guests to enjoy their time with us. And with that, I think it's also important to remember that we as business owners, business operators, we want to see growth. And the way that we are able to grow is investing in our capital, in our infrastructure. And when it comes to restaurants and things like that, that's absolutely imperative in terms of buying new equipment that can produce those experiences. Without it, if they are not operating correctly, if they just need to be invested in, and they do, they break down. You think about the amount of heat, oil, things like that that get on these kind of machines, they need regular reinvestment. And this year alone, we're looking at just right now $750,000 worth of capital investments that we want to make that we are being taxed on, and then we'll be taxed on again when we produce the items that come from those items. So when we layer those things together, And we all know, and you've probably all heard, the challenges that the restaurant industry faces with rising costs, with low margins to begin with. These type of incentives, these tax breaks, will allow us to do more for our employees. They will allow us to maintain costs for the general public and just to do our job at an exceptional level. We know everything that we do is about the people, whether that's the people coming in or the people that work for us. And that's why I hope that you will support this. And if you have any questions, I'd be very happy to answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Morrissey. Questions for members? Chair Carlson?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I was reading the bill and then the summary, and I'm kind of curious if the author or one of the people in terms of the testifiers could comment. It says capital and equipment, and it says including food trucks. So would the truck be part of that capital investment, or would it just be the equipment that went inside to prepare the food? Because that would make quite a difference in terms of, you know, there are, in fact, I don't even know if we call it a sales tax on vehicles when I think about it. But at any rate, wondering how broad the bill is in that respect, and maybe the author knows.
Well, let's go to Ms. Dalton for clarification.
Oh, okay.
Ms. Dalton, to the Carlson question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, this would not include the actual truck. It would include the capital equipment used to prepare the food.
Chair Carlson.
Okay, so if that equipment is permanently attached to the truck?
Ms. Dalton?
Because they modify these, and it's quite a big investment. I'm just curious. I'm not necessarily against it. I'm just wondering how broad the bill would be in that regard. But you're saying it's narrower than what the summary may kind of imply here. It could be interpreted as saying.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, if you bought a stove and installed it in a mobile food truck, that would be an exempt purchase under this bill. If you bought a radiator for your truck, or you bought just a truck to outfit as a food truck, no, that would not. If you bought a fully equipped food truck used, that would not, because it has to be just the capital equipment.
Okay, that clarifies it then, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious. I'm one that has happened to read some of the material and just needed an interpretation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Other questions for members? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. We will now go to the department and hear why they have concerns about reducing taxes for grade school celebrations and Little League championship parties.
Yeah.
I think that's the next bill.
Oh. And as always, Mr. Cummings, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I did reach out to Representative McDonald's office. I'm not sure if I was successful.
You were, Mr. Cummings?
Okay, Representative McDonald.
Mr. Cummings?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the opportunity to be a resource on this bill. This bill provides new sales and use tax exemptions for meals, non-alcoholic and alcoholic beverages, provided to customers at no cost by the restaurant, and prepared food and drinks purchases for and served to employees of restaurants. It also expands the definition of capital equipment to include machinery and equipment used by restaurants in the furnishing, preparing, or serving of prepared foods. First, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to bring before you some definitional questions that we would like to work with your staff on if this bill moves forward, including what is a drink, Mr. Chair, and what is a restaurant? In all seriousness, we would like
Mr. Cummings said Culver's would be a restaurant and a very fine one.
Mr. Chair, I do like they have a fish sandwich there that is just great.
North Atlantic cod.
Yes.
Delicious.
Yes.
Mr. Cummings.
In addition to validate the amount of tax paid by our paid by bars, we verify the purchases of liquor and assess use tax on the bar's liquor sales minus spillage and breakage, and allowing for giveaways in which the use tax is assessed. It will be difficult for us to verify the amounts used for giveaways and the amount that is generally untaxed. However, since the bill is written, does not exempt liquor gross receipts use tax, restaurants would continue to be required to report that tax on alcoholic beverages given to customers and employees under this proposal, which would likely create confusion for taxpayers. Allowing an exemption for complimentary meals and beverages by restaurants creates inconsistency in our law. Other businesses, such as hotels, providing complimentary meals and beverages would not qualify for this exemption. The bill would be inconsistent with our long-standing position of use tax being owed on items originally purchased exempt for resale, but either given away or taken out of inventory for use. This would create a special preference for this industry. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to be a resource. We look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, and members in continuing the conversation on this bill and other important bills impacting Minnesotans.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cummings. Questions from members? You want to wrap it up there, Representative McDonald?
Certainly. I had a question, actually, for Mr. Cummings.
Oh,
I'm not sure
okay.
if this is
That's fine.
Proper for the author, but would the department consider it consistent in state law, since restaurants manufacture a product, that they too should be exempt, like all other manufacturers in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Cummings?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I think I'm going to defer to Ms. Dalton on this, but I think there was a court case dealing with Lian Chin that dealt with this that said that restaurants were, in fact, different for these purposes, but I think I'm going to defer to Ms. Dalton.
Ms. Dalton, why are restaurants different? Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, actually, the reason they aren't exempt right now is because the law explicitly excludes sales of equipment to restaurants. I mean, so it's not that there's a philosophical difference. If you are looking at the general argument of inputs to taxable outputs should not be taxed, then there's certainly a case to be made that restaurants should not be paying sales tax on their inputs, including their capital equipment used for manufacturing. One argument against this might be that particularly restaurants in a set location are very location-specific. You serve clientele in that location, and it's not like you can move to Florida because you don't like the tax situation here.
Thank heavens we're not talking about that today.
But I mean, for regular manufacturing, giving a capital equipment exemption encourages investment in the state. That may not necessarily be as strong an argument for a capital equipment exemption for a restaurant or something similar to that that already has to locate where their customers are.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe in the case of that Mr. Cummings was speaking about, the Lian Chin's against versus Minnesota, according to my research a couple years ago, they did win the case. And I don't know what the payout was, but the judges decided that, yes, indeed, restaurants do manufacture a product like a hockey puck. Well, some hamburgers are hockey puck, but not Culver's. They have the best butter burgers you'll get anywhere. There's not Buffalo is the closest one to us. Anyway, so yeah, they won the case, and for that, the law should be changed to be consistent with the state law currently.
Representative McDonald, Lian Chin won the case.
That is correct.
Okay.
So,
okay. Mr. Cummings.
Can I ask a question, Representative McDonald?
You should. Sure, why not?
Yeah. So then what did the legislature do in response to the Lian Chin case?
McDonald?
Mr. Chair, I think they attended more of the restaurants and gave them some business, I hope.
Mr. Cummings.
Did a tour of theirs.
I think the legislature then clarified that restaurants were not available to take this this exemption. So,
Mr. Cummings, do you know what year that was?
Former Representative McElroy says 1992.
Put her in the books then. Okay, with that, Chair Carlson.
Yeah, just another quick question. This is probably, again, for staff, I guess. If you purchase a piece of equipment, you're entitled to depreciate that. And is the sales tax included in the basis for depreciation purposes? In other words, are they already perhaps getting a tax break in a sense that they'd be able to depreciate not only the cost of the equipment but the sales tax if it's included in the basis?
Well, Mr. Michael, wouldn't you deduct the sales tax paid and then depreciate the equipment? Or Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's going to be deductible one way or another. I believe that if you buy capital equipment, the sales tax is part of the acquisition cost, and so it would be, you know, if you don't qualify for 179, you are going to have to recover that over a period of time. You're not going to be able to deduct it as a tax in the year that it's incurred. But I'm
But Mr. Chairman, then the potential there.
90% sure that that's right.
Okay. Then the potential, Mr. Chairman, is there that it's either deductible as you depreciate it, or maybe upfront as a cost if you were doing some remodeling and buying a lot of equipment.
Mr. Michael,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, it is a cost of doing business, so it will be deductible. It's just a question whether it's a capital cost or whether it's an ordinary and necessary business expense. I believe it's a capital cost because it's part of the acquisition. It's just like buying a machine. You can't, you know, but I'm not, like I said, I'm only 90% sure. That
yeah, I've never heard that before.
but Mr. Chairman, my point is that one way or another, then, an upfront cost or depreciated that perhaps would qualify one way or another. So that's already out there, something to consider as the department talks with the author about how this moves forward, how it interacts, in other words, with other current tax law and expenses that a business would incur.
Thanks, Chair Carlson. Representative McDonald, we'll wrap it up.
We'll wrap it up. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, for seeing this bill. I think it would be good practice that we offer this as a sales tax exemption for capital improvement. It's consistent with current state law. And if the ever cost increases for restaurants, health care, minimum wage, and other costs of products going up, I think we need to do something in the state that really helps our businesses. And our restaurants, the restaurants for the most part are full. If you go around the state, you'll see people are dining out and they enjoy it. But if it gets to the point where the cost of doing business continues to escalate, and that'll result in the Butterburger being more expensive maybe, or the cod or whatever, we've got to consider we need to help them down here. So I hope that this will be a bill that we can put into law.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair McDonald. Vice Chair McDonald renews his motion, House File 908, as amended, be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative McDonald, and to your witnesses. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of Valentine's Day 2017. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Okay, item next. We will go to Chair Detmer and his House File 226. And so Chair Detmer moves House File 226. Chair Detmer moves the H0. Representative Detmer, is the A1 amendment yours?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Chair Detmer moves H0226 A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Chair Erickson. Okay. Item next, we will go to testimony on the bill. First of all, I would ask the question. I have on my list Mr. Al Lund, Mr. Al Halger Haig, Jenny Hinnenkamp, and Mr. Glenn Jenkins. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify for or with concerns on the bill?
Mr. Chair, we also add to that list Jenny Kaneski.
Oh, boy.
I probably mispronounced that again. I tried.
How do you spell the last name?
K-O-N-E-C-Z-N-Y.
Hopefully we can call him Ken. Hoping. Okay. Okay, so with that, we have no one in the audience wish to testify with concerns. Therefore, I would also like to check with the department if the department would like to visit about this one, and they would. So. And you know, Chair Detmer, if there's no one with concerns, then we get the testimony reduced by a little or a lot.
With that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'll reduce mine down to one sentence, and we'll go on with the testifiers here. House File 226, as amended, would allow organizations that conduct pull tabs, tip boards, electronic bingo, to also deduct their lawful purpose expenditures other than the payment of tax. So with that, our first testifier is Mr. Al Lund.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alan Lund, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. Our organization represents the 1,200 licensed organizations, nonprofits that conduct charitable gambling in Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lund.
Thank you, sir. We're here to ask the committee's support of the Community Vitality Investment Act, House File 226, whose goal is to bring some much-needed fairness and equity to the current tax structure that charitable gaming operates under. In fiscal year 2016, the 1,200 organizations paid roughly $54 million to the state in taxes. We receive no deductions of any kind. We pay tax even on our donations. We can find no one else that does not receive some tax benefit from the donations that they make. For every dollar that we take to the bank, expenses consume about 50 cents of that. Our expenses are our employees, the cost of the games themselves, the accounting help that we have, and then the rent to the bars. The remaining 50 cents, the average Minnesota charity sends the state 22 cents, leaving them with 28 cents. The charities at the top tax bracket, the 36% bracket, will, of that remaining 50 cents, will need to send 36 cents to the state, leaving them with 14 cents. The charities are fast approaching the point where we will be paying more to the state than they have for their community's needs and missions. The charities that are currently paying more to the state than they have for their communities and missions are openly asking why they still are carrying a gambling license, as nobody in our organizations joined our organization to be a tax collector for the state. A real-life example would be a fire relief organization that is looking to buy a piece of life-saving equipment such as an ambulance. That $80,000 ambulance will end up costing a charity at the upper end of the bracket $108,000 because they will need to send the state $28,000. So that's why we're asking for the support of this bill. I do have I would like to address the Minnesota Department's fiscal here. And under the revenue analysis detail on the bullet point number 2, we believe that there is an error in that the our money goes two ways. It's called the allowable expenses or the lawful purpose donations. And the previous fiscal year we had about $252 million to operate with, and the $123 million went to the lawful purpose, but that includes what is called the A8, or the state, local, and federal taxes. We are not asking for those to be part of what we would be able to deduct. And what House File 226 does is allow us to not be taxed on our donations with the exception of the A8 code. So we could really use your help with this bill. It would mean a lot to our communities. We do not raise money to save it. We raise money to spend it in our communities. That's who we are. Great people doing great work. They are a wonderful example of community service, and we should be encouraging those behaviors, not discouraging or penalizing them. The other thing that I would talk about is on bullet point number 4. That's, of course, the elephant in the room. That's the 2012 stadium bill, and that we do not believe that the intent of that legislation was to harm charitable gambling in Minnesota, but that is becoming the net effect of that bill. And we fully understand that that needs to be addressed in somewhere along in this process. And we have talked to Chair about that, and we would be more than willing to sit down with revenue and discuss ways that we think that we can handle that would minimize the impact to the state the money that we're sending in is growing every year, and we certainly feel that it's doable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from committee members to Mr. Lund. Vice Chair Markwart, or Vice Chair, Lead Markwart.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And maybe to Mr. Lund.
Sorry.
You know, ultimately we're going to have a bill and we'll have so much money to work with and so forth. And if I'm reading this correct, this would be about $26 million. Is this scalable? So let's say, boy, we want to do something, but we might not be able to do $26 million, maybe 20 of it. Is it scalable and could it work that way?
Mr. Lund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Markwart. The other part I should have mentioned, we believe the number is closer to $16 million. And is it scalable? Yeah, it certainly is. That would not be our preference, but it certainly is scalable.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Markwart?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that earlier this morning at the Property Tax Committee, Representative Markwart and myself were, he was mistaken for me as well. So it must be some good jeans in the water or something like that.
Representative Loeffler. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lund, I'm still learning a lot about charitable gambling and how it works. And I note that in the note from the Department of Revenue, on the third bullet point, it says about half of 1,100 licensed gambling organizations are nonprofit organizations that can make lawful purpose contributions to themselves. This proposal would create an incentive to increase lawful purpose contributions to themselves and use those funds to cover the cost of gambling operations. We always talk about charitable gambling in terms of donations to outside youth groups and to schools and to outside groups, but can you give us a little bit more background on the half that use it to for their own purposes and then how they could use this for operational costs where others might not be able to?
Mr. Lund.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler. So that's another one that's we believe isn't exactly telling the whole story, because it is true that the opportunity, if we were to get this bill, there would be more money available to us, but I think what this is referring to is that we would be raising our payout rates. We would try and entice more business. Our top rates are set by statute now, and that's 85, and last year we were at 83.5. And again, the ability for them to do that is set in statute, those 501(c)(3)s. And our costs are fixed. It takes like 50 cents of every dollar you get to the bank that goes to expenses today. And this is intimating that we would be looking to do something other than serve our communities. I mean, we are nothing but people that serve our communities and look to donate more money. We're looking to get more money to the bottom line. We're not looking to pad any expenses. We're not looking for any of those. All we're looking for is to have more money to spend to our communities. That's what we're asking.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lund, if that's your goal, is to get more money into the communities, then maybe the bill needs to be adjusted so they can't use this tax break to increase their operating costs, get fancier facilities, do things that, really aren't towards that charitable purpose. And the other thing I would expect that with this big a benefit, and potentially changing payouts or marketing or other things that would be allowable and expenses under this, that we would end up with potentially more compulsive gambling issues. And I don't see, typically in the past when we've dealt with gambling issues, we have made a proportionate, if not greater, contributions to charitable, to the treatment programs for people with gambling addiction, which of course shows up in all kinds of social costs in other parts of our state budget. And so I would really hope that if we're moving forward with this, Mr. Chair, that we would really look at continuing that tradition of if we're enabling and supporting gambling growth, that we at the same time recognize the price that people who do become addicted pay in their personal life, families broken apart, houses lost, businesses lost. It seems like, unfortunately, it's too common occurrence that I hear about, the treasurer, the someone who just got too tempted. And I just think we need to keep that balance going forward. Thank you.
Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Mr. Lund. I know you had presented when you met with me kind of a, you had a nice layout of all the expenses. And I don't see this at all as any expansion of gambling. I mean, as you had mentioned, it's, you know, you look at a lot of these facilities, the Legions and the VFWs where this gambling takes place, these are not Taj Mahals. You know, they're buildings that probably need a little repair and so forth. And so, you know, I'm happy to be a co-author on this bill, and it would be nice if you could, because for the first time, and Representative Laughlin, you kind of talk about it, it is kind of complicated, but you had a graph there that really laid it out real nice, and I don't know if you have that for the committee. If you don't, if you could leave that with us later, because that really laid things out on kind of where it goes and the fact that so much of this, these dollars are going into the taxes where they, if it wasn't going into taxes, it could go back out into the community. So I don't see it as expanding anything, but basically trying to actually give back into our smaller communities.
Mr. Lund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. This bill is not an expansion of gambling. This bill is about getting more money back to our communities where we address the needs. Our groups are the fabric of these communities, and there is no intent, there is no hidden agenda here. This is about helping our communities.
Lead Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Lund? Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lund, isn't it true that we're losing our licensed gambling organizations, though, as, you know, vets clubs, American Legion clubs close down because, you know, our membership is aging and there's no longer the ability to even take care of the, as Representative Marquardt noted, the buildings that these clubs have owned? So haven't we lost a number of these organizations over the years?
Mr. Lund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, yeah, that is true. We have lost a number of the veterans clubs in particular, and our fraternal organizations are shrinking. As I'm very fond of saying, the reward is no longer greater than the risk and the work for many of us. And we are losing between the Gambling Control Board publishes every month how many people are giving up their licenses, and it averages between 1, 2, 3 every month. So that is true.
Chair Erickson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We put a tremendous tax burden on this concept that we created several years ago, and I think we're doing a real disservice if we don't take a close look at Representative Detmer's bill and do something to help out, or we're not going to have this giving going on in our communities from these great warriors who have served us, because it is generally those who come to the Legion or the VFW clubs are retired veterans who actually invest in pull tabs, et cetera, and provide for this generous contribution back to the community.
Questions for Mr. Lund? Okay, we'll go to our next witness, Mr. Al Haug, or Haig. You need to help me out here.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Al Haugy.
Haugy, okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Al Haugy. I represent the Forest Lake Area Athletic Association.
And welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'd like to start off, first of all, by saying, you know, we started in charitable gambling, our organization, and I being part of it. I've been there for roughly 28 and a half years at this point. I'm the president and CEO, so I've had a lot of doing with where we've been, where we've gone, and what our mission is all about. And as I have on my sweatshirt today, because I have a hockey meeting after this, we are here to support youth, and we support youth in many, many ways. We support youth in the way of baseball, all of our field sports, hockey, so on and so forth. We encompass close to 3,000 kids within our community. Our community is made up of a large area which encompasses on Hugo, Marine, Scandia, parts of Chisago, Wyoming, Stacy, Linwood, East Bethel, Ham Lake, Lionel Lakes, Columbus, and the hub being in Forest Lake. That's a big area. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of taxpayers in the state of Minnesota that we represent. And You know, I understand the need for taxes. We all do. We understand that there's improvements that need to be provided by the state, and we as taxpayers need to do so. However, our youth sport organizations have struggled over the years to provide adequate places for our kids to play in a safe environment, while our professional athletes are getting new facilities to play and practice in. And those are billionaires that are building these stadiums, along with all of our monies. As Mr. Lund expressed, we gave, you know, pretty close to $56 million already to the new U.S. Bank Stadium. That is just absurd. I mean, when I look at my dollar amounts each and every month where we're at, after running gambling organization for charitable gambling, charitable gambling, I thought, was monies that were supposed to be stayed within our communities. As of last look, over the last 10 years, I didn't run the full 22 years of taxes that we've paid, but I know in the last 10 years it's gotten totally out of control. And I'd just like to give you an example of what I'm talking about and referring to there. In the last 10 years, from January of 2006 through December of 2016, our combined receipts paid to the Minnesota Department of Revenue and Taxes have amounted to over $2.1 million. $2.1 million. And we are an organization that is a nonprofit out there helping kids, keeping them safe, keeping them off the streets. What better way of paying back your community by keeping that going? But we seem to be getting slapped. And I'm not here to point fingers at anyone, but I'm going to point the fingers to the lawmakers of the state of Minnesota that we've elected to oversee and take a look at these things. In December, I'm just going to run by you a report that we have to do on a monthly basis called our G1. Our sales and income from our restaurants and bars in pull tab sales amounted to $367,000. Prizes that we paid out for that month were $312. $312,000. I had a total deposit of income. My gambling manager did of $54,881. We had expenses that amounted to $32,304 for the month. I had a gross profit that month of $22,705. After my lawful purpose, and lawful purpose has to do with the monies that we give back. And they may be monies that we're giving back to all of the different sporting groups that we have within our company, as we refer to, Flabby and the company, and we have baseball, fast pitch, hockey, lacrosse, so on and so forth. But also monies that we give to the school, because there's not enough money in our schools anymore to do the things that we have to do to provide. We ended up with a net profit for the month, and this is a heck of a net profit, $231. $231. Who could run a business on $231 a month when you're doing a good for your community? This is very dear to my heart. I've been involved, like I said, for over 28 years in running this organization. And I'm just appalled at where we're at with these things. These dollars need to stay in our communities, just like charitable gambling was originally intended for. And the best that we can expect is out of you good people here this morning to move forward in helping us to try to save our communities and put more back into them. I thank each and every one of you this morning for your time. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Questions for Mr. Helge? Okay, thank you very much for your
time. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Next, I have Jenny Hindenkamp, I believe.
I am Jenny Hindenkamp, and I am with Irving Community Club in Duluth, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
And I am going to let Jeannie speak first, Jeannie Kineski, who is with Irving Community Club also, a member.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jeannie Kineski, and I'm a member of the Irving Community Club for the last 50 years.
Welcome to the committee.
And I've been involved in a community club that has had charitable gambling for quite a few years. The reason we went into charitable gambling was they had a lot of families in our neighborhood that did not have the financial resources to pay the fees for extracurricular activities at school and other organized youth activities. We were coming out of recession at the time, and the monies were able to help a lot of kids. We believe that kids come first. I believe charitable gambling was first regulated by the state in 1985, and at that time, the taxes, I think, were reasonable. We gave nonprofit organizations, youth organizations, and helped those in poverty, disabled, to the schools for students to receive scholarships, for music groups, debate teams, church groups, food shelves, toys for tots, humanitarian, and the list goes on and on. All of the aforementioned we still do today, but at a very reduced rate because the needs still exist in the city and the state does not support these needs. As the years went by, the state changed the tax structure, I believe, in 1990 or 1991. At the time, some of us thought that the state was more interested in their gambling revenues than they were of anything else. Some of the organizations did go by the wayside because of the tax increases. Net receipts are what charitable gambling operation makes once prizes are given out. After net receipts, organizations have to pay allowable expenses. Out of our net receipts, our organization pays 47 employees. For some, it's a second income, and for some, it's their only income. We pay rent, we buy product, supplies, we have an annual audit, we pay all payroll and other taxes that are required, insurance, etc. None of our gambling receipts go to operate our community club. We cannot even buy a coffee pot for our community club from our charitable gambling resources. For your information, we paid the state this last month was approximately $61,500. The month before it was $58,750. Last year we paid approximately 38% in tax. It appears the most neediest of all in our community is the state of Minnesota. I believe that the $730,000 that we paid last year would basically, and I'm putting it in perspective as not the stadium, but it would pay for the 22 salaries of our legislators. I would like to see no tax for our community clubs that would have charitable gambling, as we are giving monies to a variety of needs, not just for one or two causes. But in reality, I know that the state would not be that benevolent. So therefore, I strongly recommend that you support House Bill 226. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Okay, Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just a question on regarding the bill on the sections 2.2, and this may be for the department. And it talks about revenue including interest and penalties. So I'm just curious if the department or staff has any numbers on what our charitable organizations have to pay in the event there's a human error, and unfortunately that happens because a lot of volunteers that do this work are folks that are right in our community, the Knights of Columbus, the Hockey Association in Delano I can think of, and the Legion Club just acquired the full tabs in the Legion. And often these positions are voluntary as well, some paid but volunteer. So there must be a number of what the state has collected through interest and penalties, even more money away from our charitable groups to the Department of Revenue. Anyone can answer that?
Mr. Payman?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I don't have those numbers with me right now. We can certainly follow up with the department and see if they can break that down for us, and we can provide that to the committee.
And, Representative McDonald, maybe this question from the department comes up. Well, you'll be up in a little bit. Yep. Is that okay if we defer your question? Okay. Ms. Hinnenkamp.
Yes. I am the gambling manager for Urban Community Club, and we do have 47 employees. What we gave out in donations last year, we gave out $306,472 in charitable donations back to the communities, and we paid, like she was saying, as we paid the state of Minnesota $733,383. It's more than double, you know, and it's like we get requests all the time from school groups, from baseball groups, from hockey groups, football, food shelves. We give when they have their matching in March, we give them as much as we can so they can get more food for these. The area that we're in is listed as a very low-income area. We have a lot of needs of a lot of children. I'm just going to tell you a really great story. I'm sure you all know who C.J. Hamm is. He's on the Minnesota Vikings football team. He didn't play, but he was on the practice team. I have his jersey. But anyway, that was a wonderful story. He got money from our community club. We support Valley Youth. He grew up there as a child. We now have a young boy. His name is Derek Wynn. He is to baseball what C.J. Hamm is to football. He's another West Duluth boy that grew up at Valley Youth. We support Valley Youth to the tune of $5,000 a month because there are 70-some kids that pile into a room that is smaller than this. Because that's where they have to go. Some of these kids live in cars. They have no homes. There are five or six people that volunteer there and work. And we are trying to take care of them. But there are so many groups. Like, we take care of Duluth. We take care of Proctor. We take care of Carlton and Cloquet. We have a small bar in Wright, Minnesota. We take care of Cromwell, Wright. We try to get back to all the communities that we're in. And all we're asking for is no tax on these donations. Minnesota Revenue does a wonderful job. I'm probably one of the very few family members that'll say that, but they do. We just had an audit. Did an excellent job. Gambling control, no problem. It has to be governed, and those organizations. We believe in the Minnesota system, but the taxing on donations is ridiculous.
Questions for Ms. Hinnenkamp? Okay, thank you. We'll go to Mr. Glenn Jenkins. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Glenn Jenkins. I'm the gambling manager with St. Paul Firefighters here in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
I am a fire captain on the St. Paul Fire Department. And this is my neighborhood. This is my district right here, this building. If something happens to any one of you, I'm the one that's coming tomorrow specifically. This is the first time I've done this, so if I step on anybody's toes, I apologize in advance. I'm not very polished because I am a firefighter. I dedicated my life to service of my community 20 years ago when I took the oath to become a firefighter. Roughly 13 years ago, I got into our charitable gaming organization, and it gave me an opportunity to see the positive things because I've seen so many negative. I've seen the difference that money to youth athletics can mean to a child on the east side of St. Paul that might keep them out of a gang, on the west side that could keep them out of a game where football, baseball, hockey might be the difference in that child's life. St. Paul Fire Department spreads their money as far as we can for everybody, but we do have some donations that are near and dear to our heart. The first one is Operation Warm. We buy coats for kids in the metro here, and now it's statewide, that can't afford them. We do it across the city of St. Paul, the city of Minneapolis, and this year we went up to Red Lake Reservation and bought coats for the kids up there. The second thing we donate money to is the Firefighter Cancer Network. It's a national organization that comes in and tries to prevent cancer from firefighters. It's been a big thing in the news right now. I should probably know this, but I think it's 10 or 12 cancers that firefighters are 150% more likely to get because of how things are built now. And obviously we do this statewide, just not for us, but every professional fire department, volunteer fire department. We support the Cancer Network so they can get out and get the word out so our firefighters can stay safe and cancer-free. The other thing that we donate is the Fire Foundation here in St. Paul. And this takes on a very personal thing for me. We try to do the health and wellness of firefighters in the metro. I was at two funerals in the last year for firefighters here in St. Paul. One died from heart disease. at the fire station, and the other one committed suicide from PTSD. If I could give more money to these organizations to make sure that kids had the opportunity to go play sports, keep them out of a gang, keep a gun out of their hand, if I never have to go to another funeral again because of maybe I give $1,000 and that makes a difference in a firefighter with PTSD, I would give it out of my pocket if I could. Right now, I'm going to use round numbers because I wasn't really prepared to come in here today. Last year, we brought in $8 million. We sold $8 million in pull tabs. We gave up $7 million in prizes. We were left with basically $1.2 million left. Out of that, I was able to donate $71,000 last year. The rest went in taxes and to run my business. 2 years ago, I had to make the decision. We already paid our employees well above minimum wage. I had to make the decision to keep our employees working or let them go. And I had to go to each and every one of my 40 employees and tell them that I was cutting their pay to minimum wage just so we could stay solvent. I'm at the point now where I have to make the decision on, do I shut down and lay off 40 people? Do I lay off those 40 people and put machine dispensing pull tabs in the sites just so we can stay solvent and continue to donate money? Or do I keep operating on a shoestring budget? You can ask my wife. The stress that I go through month to month to pay my taxes, to make my payroll, and to make donations is tremendous. It's hard on me, but it is worth the time that I put into it. It is worth the stress. I think all in all, I heard somebody over here said expanding gaming. I'm just looking to stay solvent. I don't want to expand anything. I just want to stay above water so I can keep people working and donate money. The government can only give us so much. I understand that. But things like this give the money that the government can't. And at the end of the day, I can't charge $2 for a dollar pull tab. It's a dollar. I mean, nobody's going to buy a dollar pull tab for $1.50, $2. It's just not the way it is. I can't raise my prices. The only thing I can do is get rid of employees or ask for help. And that's what I'm asking for you guys to hear today. I'm asking for help. Help me help my community. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Jenkins? Okay. We will go now. Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. We will now go to the department. Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I first wanted to say that my testimony is not about the level of taxation for this particular industry or these particular customers. When the revenue estimate was released last night, I wanted to make sure there were a couple elements that were on the revenue estimate that were brought into testimony. Mr. Chair, the costs could be significantly greater than $26 million per year figure that was referenced in one of the bullets in the revenue estimate. About half of the 1,100 licensed gambling organizations are nonprofit organizations that can make lawful purpose contributions to themselves. The proposal would create an incentive to increase lawful purpose contributions to themselves and those funds to cover the costs of gambling operations. This would reduce their tax liability. The impact of this type of transfer on the remaining tax base is unknown, but it could be much larger than $26 million, and that number could grow. In addition, transfers of charitable gambling revenue to the stadium reserve account are forecast to be $27.3 million for fiscal year 18, $29.3 million in fiscal year 19, $31.3 million in fiscal year 2020, and increasing after that. Under the bill, the transfers to the stadium reserve account would be greatly reduced, perhaps to zero, because charitable gambling revenues
would be near or below the $36.9 million baseline below which no transfers occur. So we just wanted to make you aware of this interaction now so that you could take it into account as you consider this bill. And again, Mr. Chair, I think that there may be more work to be done in if the policy intent is to provide relief to these organizations. There may be some more work to be done in order to make sure that the bill is targeted and narrow in order to do that. But as always, Mr. Chair, if this bill moves through the process, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you and Representative Detmer and members and staff, and we thank the committee for the opportunity to be a resource.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cummings, to my question earlier, would you have an answer for that? And I'll repeat it if you would like.
Mr. Cummings?
No, but thank you for the reminder, Representative McDonald. I don't have a figure with me in terms of what is the interest and penalty that is assessed to charitable gaming organizations or the taxpayers in this instance. That's something that I can certainly ask and see if that's something we can provide.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And then just for the record, Mr. Cummings, I believe I know, but just in case I don't, what would be the causes for interest and penalties?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, there are, under current law, there's a number of reasons why interest and penalty could be assessed. There, it could be, you know, late filing. It could be, there could be some for an under payment. There are a number of them. I can also provide that to you, Representative McDonald, in the committee. There also may be instances in which that the department would be providing interest to taxpayers if there's a refund that is not quite timely or something.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you. Yeah, just a note. I think it's important to have consequences, of course, for maybe deliberate negligence in handling it, but oftentimes in these cases there's simple mistakes made, and yet here's another cause and effect that takes even more money out of those precious gambling monies because of a human error that was done out of the goodness of the heart of a charitable organization. So it's just another evidence that here it is for a mistake. Oh, you're going to even have less money to get to the Little League football team or legions or whatever. So.
Well,
Mr. Cummings.
And Mr. Chair, I want to be clear that you know the interest and penalties that we would assess, we'd be assessing in accordance with the law, right? So this isn't penalties and interest that the Department of Revenue decided to assess. This is what we're trying to do to ensure that we're meeting the legislative intent and what the legislature has asked us to administer. That's our job. So, but we would be happy to provide this information to the committee.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions for the department? Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cummings, if there's charitable gambling at an Indian casino, do they still pay the same taxes that these other organizations do?
Mr. Cummings.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am definitely going to defer to Mr. Klayman and Mr. Michael, as they would maybe know more about that area than I.
Mr. Klayman, to Chair Erickson's question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the lawful gambling taxes are only applied to lawful gambling conducted under Chapter 349. That would be pull tabs, paddle wheels, bingo, etc., what we authorize, and so that does not cover gaming, tribal gaming, and there are, of course, jurisdiction issues, too, in terms of imposing taxes on charitable gaming.
Chair Erickson?
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Klayman, I think that there are pull tabs sold, though, at some of the casinos, so that was my question. If pull tabs or other that are under this law, would they pay those taxes?
Mr. Klayman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, with regard to the sales of pull tabs, under the IGRA, Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. So any form of gambling that the state authorizes, the tribes can also, well, in general, can also do. But we don't have the authority under state law to impose state tax on tribal gaming, even if it's the same type.
Chair Erickson.
Thank you.
Other questions for the department? Chair Detmer, if you'd wrap it up here, we need to get to the next bill. Because it's mine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
but Chair Detmer, take all the time you want. I think I would go before your committee, so just wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think we can all relate to the testimonies that was brought forth today. I think all of us have these organizations, whether it's VFWs, American Legions, athletic booster clubs, or fire departments. We all have these organizations in our districts, in our communities. And the testimony today said it well. And with that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion. I hope they'll get your support here.
And I apologize to you. I did see that. Did Mr. Lund have something else to wrap up with? Or
no, we're fine. We're fine. Okay. We just want to do a rebuttal from Mr. Cummings, but we're fine.
Okay. So we will. This is a work in progress. This is not the last we're going to be talking about this. So, I mean, you can put it on the record if you'd like, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity. The only comments that I would make is that the 2012 legislation, there was winners and losers. We do not believe that there was any intent to harm charitable gambling in Minnesota, but the net effect of the legislation is that at this point it is hurting charities. There is no hidden agenda here to expand gambling. We have no other purpose other than helping our communities. There is no other intent of this legislation other than getting more money to our communities. Thank you.
Okay. And does the department want to say anything, or we're good to go? Okay. So with that, Chair Detmer moves House File House File 226 as amended be included in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay. With that, we will go to item last, which is House File 906. I will move House File 906 so that it is before the committee. And you should have some house research information. There's a letter from Smoke Free Generation, and there are no amendments. Okay, so with that, I will move House File 906, a very simple bill. What it does is it says that basically freezing the inflator on tobacco. And with that, first of all, just see a lay of the land here. Is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns on the bill? Anyone wish to testify in support of the bill? Does the department wish to testify? I'll think about it. Okay. If we could please have a Mr. Carr and a Mr. Rush come down, and since there's no one to testify with concerns, there'll be limited testimony if possible, and then we will bring the department up so they can share their broad support for House File 906. Okay, so please state your name. Who represents the record, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brian Carr. I'm the Government Relations Director and Legal Counsel at the Minnesota Retailers Association. We are a statewide trade association consisting of small, Main Street, regional, and national retailers. Today, I want to voice our support for your bill, Mr. Chair, House File 906, that has bipartisan support. Included in your packet is a list of organizations supporting this bill. This legislation would remove an autopilot tax increase on illegal Minnesota product. Minnesota is already the only state to assess a separate sales tax on cigarettes that adjusts annually depending on the average price of a pack. Our concern with the auto inflator is twofold, members. First, Minnesota has not one but two automatic adjustment mechanisms that are on autopilot to increase taxes on cigarettes and other tobacco products. Removing the autoinflator does not roll back tobacco taxes. In fact, the bill would freeze the current excise tax and maintain one automatic adjustment rather than two. 2013, the state excise tax increased by 130%. Minnesota now has the seventh highest cigarette tax rate in the country, and the automatic adjustment drives consumer prices up to a level that is simply uncompetitive for our retailers. This increase happens without any legislative oversight and is paid by Minnesota consumers. Secondly, in some cases, the 2013 increase resulted in tobacco product sale losses of 50% or more. The problem has been exacerbated along our borders and in greater Minnesota communities, where a recently updated economic impact study estimates more than 2,800 jobs have been lost since that 2013 increase of 130%. Minnesota is losing approximately $38 million per year in tax revenue due to lost sales from non-tobacco products. And now over 35% of all tobacco products consumed in Minnesota are brought in from other states. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this measure was in last year's omnibus tax bill that was passed by the legislature with bipartisan support. Again, we are not asking to roll back a tobacco tax today. Our request is to simply keep the state to one mechanism to adjust taxes instead of two. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
I think we'll go to Mr. Rush, then we'll go to questions from members for both Mr. Rush and Mr. Clark. Mr. Rush.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Rush. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Holiday Companies. We are a family-owned, Bloomington-based convenience store company. Next year, we will celebrate our 90th year of doing business. We have over 300 corporate and franchise convenience stores in Minnesota and employ over 4,200 individuals. Given the 130% increase in the excise tax in 2013 and the annual inflation adjustment, Minnesota is uncompetitive in the sale of cigarettes. In checking retail prices in the last few days, a legally sold carton of Marlboro cigarettes sells for over $85 in Minnesota, which is almost $12 higher than Wisconsin, over $20 higher than South Dakota, and almost $36 more than North Dakota. That's a lot of money. This price disparity is causing the convenience store industry to lose significant market share to bordering states. For example, we have 9 convenience stores in Duluth, and we have experienced a significant decline in sales of cigarettes. Correspondingly, our stores in Superior, Wisconsin have seen very significant sales increases. East Metro convenience stores such as Stillwater, West Lakeland, and Bayport have also seen substantial declines in sales, whereas convenience stores in western Wisconsin across from the metro area such as St. Croix Falls and Somerset have seen significant increases in sales. Doing business in Moorhead, Minnesota in the cigarette category is virtually hopeless, with a price difference of almost $36 per carton. Our two stores there have had an enormous decline in cigarette sales, while Fargo, North Dakota convenience stores have experienced a very high increase in retail sales. Our store in Ortonville, Minnesota on the South Dakota border has suffered devastating sales losses. We don't have any stores on the Iowa border, but Iowa's excise tax at $1.36 per pack is lower than South Dakota's at $1.53. So I can only imagine that retailers on that border are suffering severe sales losses. A 2016 report from the Mackinac Center focused on the correlation between cigarette taxes and smuggling. Casual smuggling occurs when individuals cross border shop in another state where taxes are lower and cigarettes are correspondingly less expensive. The report concludes that Minnesota is the fifth highest level of smuggling in the nation, jumping by 11 points from the prior year. Almost 36% of all cigarettes in Minnesota are smuggled in. The report further states that the smuggling rate will continue to climb due to tying automatic cigarette tax increases to inflation. This disparity in pricing and resulting loss of sales is staggering. On average, convenience stores rely on tobacco for about 40% of our inside sales. The annual inflation adjustment of the state excise tax will only make this problem worse. Accordingly, we respectfully request that House File 906 receive favorable approval. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Questions for members? Representative Groppel. Chairman Groppel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just Mr. Rush, so again, carton of cigarettes from a college town of Grand Forks in North Dakota versus East Grand Forks in Minnesota. What's the differential there? Did you mention for the
Mr. Rush?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, the price disparity for using Marlboro as an example, the most popular variety, it's about $36 difference.
So, Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and members, so I'm not a smoker, and I know that lowering the price of cigarettes is not a top priority for many legislators. But if you don't realize the amount of bootlegging that's going on right now in the state of Minnesota from across our borders, it is a, there are some kids in college in North Dakota. This is their job. Mr. Rush, are you familiar with what the limit is and the number of cartons of cigarettes that can be sold at a retail establishment in North Dakota?
Mr. Rush?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I don't know of any specific limit in the state of North Dakota.
Chair Garofalo?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, so just to be clear, if a college student picks up 10 cartons of Marlboros on their way home, let's say they live in the Twin Cities and they drive down here, their gross profit is $360 just for 10 cartons of cigarettes. Even if they cut it in half, it's $180 to $200. Okay. There is, you go to any, I won't say VFW, but you go to any establishment within 100 miles of the North Dakota border right now, you can go to a sign-up sheet and you can sign up for what your order is when they run to North Dakota and buy the cigarettes. Okay, I mean, it is. We are clearly so far out of the range of this issue that we are incentivizing people to break our law, and I would just encourage members not to look at this for making tobacco products cheaper, but to understand what is actually happening in the real world today. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thanks, Chair Garofalo, but I do believe those college students would be declaring that on their tax returns.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Chair Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rush, what did you say the percentage of retail sales was in convenience stores that is cigarettes? Did you say 40%?
Mr. Rush?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we rely typically in our industry on about 40% of our insight sales being tied to tobacco.
Okay, I guess I didn't realize it was
Chair,
that high, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Rush, and you said that you believe that 36% of the tobacco products or cigarettes sold in Minnesota are illegally here from other states. Is that what you said?
Mr. Rush?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's based upon a Mackinac Center study that concluded that approximately 36% of all cigarettes consumed in the state are purchased elsewhere.
Thank you.
Chair Knobloch? Chair Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rush, have you guys done an analysis to see how the revenue off of cigarette taxes in North Dakota or Iowa or these other states has changed since we changed the law here in Minnesota? And maybe if you don't have that data, I don't know if our staff has that at all. Or
Mr. Rush, do you, first of all?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I don't have access to that data.
Mr. Clayman? Okay, Chair Anderson?
Just curious to see what the change has been.
Okay, if there's no other questions, we will go to, I'm sorry, Representative Schultz and then Carlson. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any information on how we prosecute or how we investigate this smuggling and what we're doing about this?
Who's that question for?
The testifier.
Mr. Rush.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe there is a limit by state law bringing in one carton of cigarettes into the state of Minnesota. What level of enforcement occurs there, I do not know.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it beyond the power of the tobacco companies to set different prices in different states of the cartons of cigarettes? Are they allowed to do that?
Mr. Rush.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, I don't know how the tobacco companies price their product. If it's state to state or to a particular company.
Well, Mr. Rush, do you pay, does Holiday Store in North Dakota pay the same per carton as Minnesota?
The answer to that would be no, in big part because of the difference in the excise tax rate.
Okay. Representative Schultz?
Okay, thank you. I think that we should maintain our taxes on cigarettes and the inflator, because we spend a lot of money in the state on health care related to smoking. And this money, I think one of our former governors, Pawlenty, called it a health care user fee to pay for that difference in the outcomes. to address the health issues. So if we reduce this amount, our state is going to be in trouble because we won't be able to pay for the health effects, the negative health effects that smoking has. So I oppose this bill.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. As far as the enforcement, in the past, the department has come to me and to this committee requesting several $1 million for what was termed as the smoking hot tobacco cops, if you remember that, because smuggling is becoming such a problem, and that's where we learned that if you take a Suburban and an 8x12 U-Haul, you can go to North Dakota, load them up, come back to Minnesota and sell them, kind of on what the good college student was doing on a little bigger basis, and make $1 million. The high tobacco tax in Minnesota is not reducing smoking necessarily. Now, Mr. Carr, I think, said that 35% of the cigarettes are smuggled in. Now, are they paying a use tax on that?
I would assume not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We got to work on compliance here. Okay, so with that being said, we will go to Chair Carlson and then Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chairman, I have a little different point of view than what the testifiers are bringing forward because, Representative Schultz, I'm concerned about the huge health care costs. And just being that nobody else testified, I grew up in a household where my father, and I've mentioned this before, World War II vet, he went into the service and literally for a variety of reasons came out a chain smoker. So along with my four siblings, we grew up in a household with heavy tobacco smoke. Fortunately, none of us, when you talk about secondhand smoke, but I read every article that I see in the paper about secondhand smoke, and I've now made it to my 76th year without any particular problems. But I will say this, my father died, as many, many smokers do, from smoke-related illnesses. And not only that, he worked for the railroad, had a good job with the railroad, but had to take early retirement because his health was such because his lungs could no longer allow him to, part of his job was outside. So when he took early retirement due to health issues and smoking-related issues for the driver, that meant that both my father and mother for the rest of their lives had a smaller pension than what he might have had had his health remained where he could have worked until a normal retirement age. So there are some costs that I think we need to talk about, and I think they have to be on the table. My only other comment, Mr. Chairman, is that when there was reference by one of the testifiers that the tax bill had passed, and I assume that that was in reference to the conference committee report with strong bipartisan support. Let's remember that was an omnibus bill. I voted for the bill at the time, but one particular provision in the bill was this very issue here. So to read into that over 100, I think we have 110 or 11 people who voted for the bill. That doesn't mean that the vote was that strong for this particular provision. I just want to put that on the table. And then I do have a question for the testifiers, and the one in particular that was speaking for the Retail Federation or Association. How do you arrive at a position, because it looks like with what's at the bottom of the paper that was passed out, it would be mainly within the retail community, those people that sell cigarettes or benefit from the sale of cigarettes, and the retail establishment would be far beyond just the ones that are listed there that may be benefiting directly from the bill. And so my question is, how do you arrive at a position where you come in and you say the retail association supports the bill, and no doubt you do, you've taken a position, but my question, how do you arrive at a position on any given piece of legislation, especially one like this that is ultimately very controversial?
Mr. Carr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, thank you very much for your question. To take any position on any piece of legislation or provision, our association has several different layers of processing certain bills or processing certain policies. We first start out 6 months prior to session. We go through a survey to ask our retailers what is the biggest issue they're having, what are the biggest challenges they are facing, what's the largest uncompetitive nature or competitive challenges or competitive advantages that they're seeing. We then correlate that data and we start to pare it down to a few more issues. Representative Carlson, we then send that information back out to our members. We then have more dialogue, more narrative. Representative Carlson, we then have a legislative summit where we bring all of our membership in. We have everyone around a table similar to this dais here. We have conversation on each and every policy, Representative Carlson. We then have an executive committee representative. That executive committee also looks at all of our policies and legislation. It then goes back to our board of directors representative, and then we move forward with supporting certain policies or specific pieces of legislation similar to what you see in front of you. I hope that answers your question as to how we arrive on any piece of legislation, and specifically with this individual piece of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, it does in a sense, but it doesn't really, and I don't necessarily expect you to share it, that initial survey, what percentage of the retailers said that this was an important issue. I understand, and it's an interesting process and probably a pretty deliberative one that you described. But it would be interesting to know if the retailers are saying on a list what are our most important issues, what percentage of them would have in fact listed this as a high priority, and that's probably somewhat proprietary, so I won't press that point. But at any rate, I was curious how you arrive at a decision when you say the Retail Association supports, like I say, this bill or any given bill that they come in and support or oppose. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. I have a question before we go to Chair Dabney, then we'll go to the department. Mr. Klayman, House File 906, how much of the money that would be saved, because now we don't have the inflator, we're not cutting the cigarette tax at all, zero. How much of the money, how much does this bill affect the tobacco companies? How much do the tobacco companies make on this bill?
Mr. Chair, I think you're referring to the where this tax is actually imposed. This is a tax that's imposed at the distributor level. So both the cigarette excise tax and the in-lieu sales tax on cigarettes are imposed at the distribution level. So it'll be the distributor that ultimately pays the tax.
So the tobacco company receives no benefit from this.
Well, Mr. Chair, the tobacco manufacturer who's making the cigarettes is not subject to this tax.
Chair Dabney, then we'll go to the department. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would contend that the tobacco companies will benefit from this because of increased or continued sales that otherwise might stop, that they otherwise might lose as prices go up. Between 2010 and 2014, while Mr. Chair, you contend that these tax changes don't make anybody quit, between 2010 and 2014, smoking went down amongst adults, all adults, 11% in Minnesota, and between adults between the ages of 18 and 24 went down 30%. Now, I recognize that's bad business for holiday stores. And it requires them to be more thoughtful and competitive and strategic in their marketing and the products that they carry. They would rather not have to be more competitive. But at the same time, we as a state and as individuals are saving probably significant amounts of money in healthcare costs. And I think on balance, we are better off not passing a benefit along to the tobacco companies through this bill, and probably better off passing a benefit along to Minnesotans who take a look at this and start thinking about quitting. Quitting smoking, having done it myself, is awfully, awfully difficult. I did it. I did it about a dozen times. And then it finally stuck. It stuck. I got some practice in Representative Hurdos and then finally figured out how to do it right. That didn't help holiday stores, but it sure helped me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Mr. Cummings from the department.
And then, members, we will
certainly allow questions for Mr. Cummings from members, but we do have floor session at 12:15, so when we wrap it up, we'll be heading over to the floor, and I want to give people time to get over there. Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I was able to call your office yesterday, so I hope you got the message, Mr. Chair.
We did.
Seeing a reassuring yes, but maybe no.
It was so delightful.
The purpose of the cigarette tax increase in 2013 was to balance the budget, make strategic investments in healthcare, education, and economic development, and reduce smoking in Minnesota, in particular among youth. Since the increase took effect, smoking has declined, most notably among high school students. The steeper decline in smoking that happened after the tax increase didn't occur in other states that did not enact tobacco law changes comparable to the changes in Minnesota. The percent of high school students who smoked cigarettes in the past 30 days dropped from 18.1% in 2011 to 10.6% in 2014, the steepest decline ever recorded by the Minnesota Teens and Tobacco Survey. Adult smokers reported that that the 2013 cigarette tax increase influenced their smoking behaviors, with 61% thinking about quitting, 48% cutting down on smoking, and 44% making quit attempts, according to the Minnesota Adult Tobacco Survey. Among smokers who successfully quit in the past year, 63% reported that it helped keep them from smoking again. Eliminating the inflator on this tax will make cigarettes more affordable for our youth who are more price-sensitive years down the road. Removing the inflator over time would lower the cost of cigarettes over time in real dollars. For these reasons, Governor Dayton has been critical of this proposal in the past and continues to oppose it today. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith support a balanced, common-sense approach in their budget that protects the state's long-term fiscal health. In fiscal year 2021, the cost of this bill will be over $21 million. That figure only grows over time. It will be important to ensure long-term fiscal balance with any budget that is passed. And as with all bills, Mr. Chair, if this bill moves through the process, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, and members and staff. Thank you for the opportunity to be a resource, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings, for your testimony. And I would just note that Governor Dayton did say in 2010 that he opposed increasing taxes on cigarettes. So there is a little history there, too. So, but that's probably for another day. Questions for Mr. Cummings, Representative Hertas, Carlson, Loeffler, and then we're going to the floor. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Cummings, thanks for the testimony. You seem to have included data that seems to be from the industry, the tax, cigarette industry. I was wondering if you have any data that you could share since 2010, 2014 with regard to increasing the taxes on cigarettes and how that relates to revenue.
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, Representative Protas, I'm not sure if I understand the question. Are you asking what, if we have reports on the total revenue that we've collected from cigarette taxes? Is that the question,
Representative Hertas?
Yes, that is the question. If you could reflect on what revenues have been received from taxes on cigarettes.
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, I don't have my tax handbook here with me. Obviously the tax has increased in because of the changes made in 2013. And I can provide that information in a historical basis to the committee.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you. I just was trying to see if whether or not increasing the taxes had suited its goal of reducing smoking.
Okay. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little bit confused because I hear Representative Dabney say we want people to smoke less tobacco. I see Representative Applebaum wants people to smoke more pot, and I was trying to figure out which one it is.
So, like I said, Representative Carlson.
It wasn't really a question.
Oh, okay. Chair Carlson.
I'll yield to Representative Applebaum.
Representative Applebaum.
He leaned forward, so I thought maybe.
His name was used, Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Carlson, Representative Garofalo, I think that people are going to always smoke both cigarettes and marijuana in the state of Minnesota, and the state of Minnesota would be wise to capitalize from those Minnesotans' use in the form of tax revenues to fund important projects. Thank you.
Mr. Garofalo. Chairman, you have the floor, Chair Carlson.
Yeah,
I do have
a very quick question of the department, because smuggling did come up. And I know the department has had some requests on the enforcement side, and if you could refresh my memory or the committee's memory of what the legislative response has been and what the department might feel is still a need relative to reducing the amount of smuggling.
Mr. Cummings, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so I wanted to be clear that when we're talking about the proposals that deal with the transfer of untaxed tobacco products into the state, that we're really focusing on what we call OTP, so it's other tobacco products. When we're going out and we're finding untaxed tobacco products, we are finding the OTP, the other tobacco products, so like moist snuff or loose tobacco or other types of tobacco. In terms of cigarettes, cigarettes do a very good job because they have the cigarette stamp on them, right? So we are seeing the less type of sort of wholesale smuggling. Now, as mentioned, a taxpayer would be able to bring into the state one carton of cigarettes from another state, and that is legal. In terms of the proposals that the Department of Revenue is bringing forward this year, the first proposals is a set of what we believe is sort of common sense fee and penalty provisions that deal with the distributors and subjobbers. Right now, it's very easy to get a distributor or subjobber license. So we have asked that the fee be increased so that we are only providing the license to the people who are actually in the business of doing that. In addition, we've asked for the ability to stamp moist snuff. So because the cigarette stamps work so well at providing compliance related to the cigarette tax, we've asked that the stamping take place on moist snuff. That would provide an additional level there. We also have what we believe are some common sense changes related to vapor taxation, but we can leave that for another day, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
I think you're right on that one.
If I may, I'm not currently, but last biennium I served on state government finance, and I thought you had a request for more agents for enforcement, but maybe I'm wrong on that because it's been a couple of years since we had that issue before state government finance. But I will stop there, Mr. Chairman, because I know we have to get across the street, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Carlson. And the last person with questions, Chair Loeffler. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, since one of the witnesses for the bill noted their allies in their handouts, I just thought I'd call attention to the Minnesotans for Smoke-Free Generation handout that's in your packet, and they represent the voices of 50 other organizations, from Children's Defense Fund, faith-based groups, health organizations, and while it was unfortunate they weren't able to testify here, I think it should be on the record that over 50 organizations look at this very differently.
And thank you for that, and that should be in your packets, members. And we did, we only had two folks notify us about testifying, so of course anybody's welcome to. With that, tomorrow we're going to be, Mr. Cummings, I will move that House File 906 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Mr. Cummings, and we will be, thank you for being a resource. We will work on this together. With that being said, tomorrow we're working on education issues. It's kind of education day at the Tax Committee, and so we all look forward to those bills. So with that, members, thank you for your work. Good government all the time. We are